Have you found that no matter what you do, you just seem to never have enough energy? Do you always feel drained? Do you always feel fatigued? Do you not feel refreshed when you wake up in the morning, even when you have had a full night's sleep? Well, you're in the right place because today I have got Bridget from Bridget B Naturopathy on the podcast, and we are chatting about everything to do with energy and fatigue. We're going to be digging into thyroid function, recurrent iron deficiency, nutrient deficiencies, and gut health, and all sorts of things that can contribute to fatigue so that you can start to get a handle on why it is you might be feeling so lethargic all the time. Now, in this episode, Bridget shares an absolute wealth of knowledge, and I think you might want a pen and paper for this one because we are talking about the types of tests to request from your doctor and what to look at when you actually get those results as well. Welcome to The Thriving Metabolism. I'm Louise Digby, your host. I'm a women's weight loss expert and founder of The Nourish Method to Lasting Fat Loss. Let's dive in. Welcome back, and I'm here with Bridget, and I'm so excited to have you here and pick your brain and find out all about what you do and what your areas of expertise are. First of all, I always think it's great to find out your story and how it is that you got into nutrition in the first place. So walk us through that.
So I grew up in Australia and came over to the UK about 6 years ago. But I guess growing up in Oz, it's kind of just like quite an active sort of healthy lifestyle. You're outdoors a lot. The weather's good. So I was kind of exposed to, a healthier lifestyle growing up. Lots of sport, veggie gardens, things like that. I remember when I was younger, I was just really interested in like the body, the human body, and the way that it worked. And so then I ended up studying nutrition and naturopathic medicine. That was in 2013. So that took 4 years. And then I've been in clinic since then. So been a journey, as you know. But yeah, I love it. I can't imagine kind of doing anything else.
What sort of area do you specialize in or that you see most in your clinic?
So definitely women's health. A lot of menstrual irregularities, anxiety, endometriosis, and then kind of complex gut conditions as well. So a lot of IBD, ulcerative colitis, things like that.
I know when we were chatting before, we were talking a lot about fatigue, and you know, this is such a common complaint for, well, pretty much everyone that I've ever worked with. You know, it always seems to be a problem that people don't have enough energy. What's the difference between like normal lack of energy and actual fatigue?
So I guess like it can be normal to be a bit tired sometimes, you know, if you've been working really hard or exerting yourself a lot, maybe if you've got small children. But it's when it's kind of ongoing and constant and you're constantly waking up unrefreshed, even if you've had like 7, 8, 9 hours sleep, and it's just sort of that kind of ongoing chronic exhaustion that we'd be starting to look at it and trying to figure out what else might be going on that would be causing that.
So many people that we work with have fatigue. So why is it so common, and what is it that's actually causing fatigue?
I think it's a number of things. I think probably number one is nutrient deficiencies. You know, our soils are really depleted. We live very stressful, busy lifestyles, which burn through a lot of our nutrients. We probably aren't matching that with the quality or the kind of nutrient density of food that we should be. So yeah, I'd say a lot of it does boil down to nutrition and stress as being like, you know, too much out, not enough in. But then, you know, there are lots of other factors as well. People will say, you know, I've had tests done, everything, I've been told everything's fine and they're still tired. And then we'd be looking more at their hormones, their thyroid, their gut function, things like that. So yeah, I'd say it's multifactorial, but kind of encompassing all of those things, really.
Yeah, definitely. There's so many different factors that can contribute to fatigue, isn't there? With like our modern crazy lifestyles that we have, where we are really, you know, whether we try to or not, we're really kind of burning the candle at both ends, aren't we? You know, when you look at like the impact that things like social media has on us, you know, the busy lifestyles that we lead, the food that we have that's so depleted of nutrients, how realistic is it to actually have optimal energy levels in the first place?
You know, you just have to do the best that you can. And if nutrition is good and you're sleeping well, you know, I think sleep is really overlooked, and we sort of think of sleep as like that sort of bottom of the barrel in terms of priorities. But a lot of the research that's come out in the past few years on sleep is so interesting, with like diabetes and cardiovascular disease, a lot of like more long-term and chronic health conditions. So I think sleep, you know, we do need to be prioritizing that and not just pushing in this much into a hectic lifestyle. So yeah, I know it is hard, especially if you live in the city or you're working, if you've got children. But I think there's always small tweaks that we can make to improve energy, whether that's a nutrient deficiency that just hasn't been picked up. The nutrient reference ranges for a lot of the blood tests, which you would see as well, you know, are really broad. Naturopaths and nutritionists use much finer reference ranges. So sometimes that, even just the slightest, like a suboptimal level of B12 or subpar thyroid function, for example, just tweaking those can make a massive difference.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, this is something that I'm talking to clients about all the time, is there's a big difference between having normal blood test results or normal nutrient levels and optimal levels. And just because it's normal doesn't mean that that's good enough for you to feel at your very best. And then there's also the individuality as well. Everyone's different, aren't they? And a doctor might tell someone that actually they're at the high end of the range and they might be better off if they're down at the lower end of the range. But actually that person knows that they feel a hell of a lot better if they are up at that high end of the range. So you've got to listen to your own body as well, haven't you? If someone is to go to their doctor and ask for some tests to be done, what sort of things should they be asking for if they are struggling with fatigue?
So I think, you know, explaining all of your symptoms, and then a lot of kind of like the basic chemistry will be a full blood count, that's your red blood cells, your white blood cells, a full iron panel. Not just ferritin, which is often done. So ferritin's your stored iron, but it's important to have a look at all of the other iron parameters as well, because ferritin's quite sensitive to infection and inflammation. So sometimes you can get a false kind of positive iron reading if you're just testing ferritin. And then B12 is always great to check. I think B12 deficiency is massively underdiagnosed. Again, coming back to the reference ranges, but so full blood count, iron, B12, folate, thyroid panel as well, TSH and T4, usually what they'll do. Yeah, I think that's a kind of good basic starting point for some blood. Most GPs will be willing to run. Oh, and vitamin D, super important.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely agree. It's a really good starting point, because the likelihood is there's going to be something there that isn't optimal. I'm really intrigued to get your opinion on things like B12 injections and vitamin D injections, because they've become really popular recently and you get kind of people springing up who offer them who aren't necessarily qualified in nutrition. And I'd love to know what you think about that.
You know, if it's prescribed properly, like by a doctor or a naturopath or, you know, by a practitioner, then they can be helpful. If someone's vitamin D is on the floor, it can make them feel a bit better. But, you know, vitamin D is fat soluble, so you can have too much of it. And I think that is, you know, a little bit of a concern, because it's not regulated the way that, you know, that injections and things can work. With vitamin B12 as well, if you're going and just having top-up injections, you may be overlooking the root cause of why it's deficient, which is usually poor gut function. I think, yeah, they have a place, but they're not sort of like a panacea.
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, I think they're kind of marketed as this solution to deficiencies, but like you say, they're something to pick you up quickly, but we really want to understand why you have a chronic deficiency in the first place. And I think it's for many nutrients that we're lacking in, so often not to do with a lack in the diet, it's often because you're not absorbing them properly. You know, we're always told you are what you eat, but really it's a case of you are of what you absorb.
Exactly.
Let's talk a little bit more about the thyroid, because again, this is such a common issue. Why are thyroid problems so common?
Yeah, I mean, they are. They're super common. And I think a lot of people as well are walking around with thyroid issues undiagnosed, not knowing, because they're probably not diagnosed properly either. But when you think about the thyroid, so the thyroid is a butterfly-shaped gland in our throat, but the actual beginning of thyroid hormone production begins in the brain. Anything that affects the brain, like stress, is really going to affect our thyroid function. And I think clinically, that's probably the biggest thing that I see shutting down thyroid function is really long-term chronic stress or a big trauma, nutrient deficiencies as well, because the thyroid hormones themselves are made from nutrients. Sometimes post-virally, like an infection can affect the thyroid. Like it's a really sensitive little gland, so it can fluctuate depending on what it's fed, sleep, stress. But yeah, I'd say probably nutritional deficiencies, stress and environmental toxicity as well.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I can definitely attest to how important stress management is for supporting your thyroid function, because I personally have had experience with this. I did everything that I could nutrition-wise, you know, lifestyle-wise, but the one thing that I was overlooking was stress. And it wasn't until I actually started taking steps to manage stress levels better that I saw my thyroid slowly normalize. I think that's also a really important thing for us to acknowledge, is that thyroids can be normalized and go, you know, back to a normal, healthy function. Because a lot of people are under the impression that once you're diagnosed with underactive thyroid, then that's it. You've got underactive thyroid, you've got to take medication, and that's all you can do. Have you seen good results in clinic with normalizing thyroid function?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, yeah, if you can kind of pinpoint what that person's root cause is and what triggered it in the first place, and really get that stress pathway under control, and not just emotional stress, but also physical stress. So making sure that you're eating enough, making sure that you're eating enough of all the different food groups, that you're not over-exercising, because that can be a big stress as well, particularly for women. You know, it does shut down thyroid function at the brain level. So just finding that that sort of balance. I mean, there's so much that we can do nutritionally from a conventional side of the table. There'd be usually, for an underactive thyroid, which is most common, prescribing thyroxine, which is a synthetic thyroid hormone, which is produced in the thyroid. But if you take a step back from that, the TSH, which is usually what's measured on a blood test, is produced in the pituitary gland in the brain. So we want to make sure that the pituitary gland is functioning properly, which is where all the stress management comes in. Then making sure that you have the building blocks that you need to make the thyroid hormones. So thyroxine, which they give as a medication, is made from protein and iodine molecules. And iodine's it's hugely depleted in our soil. So it's a massive nutrient deficiency, like globally in the UK and definitely in Australia as well. So which is why we have iodized salt, because it affects the thyroid and that affects so many other things for people. So if you can get nutritional levels right, get the nervous system under control, get the gut and the liver functioning, which is where all the thyroid hormone conversion and activation happens. And then if there is an autoimmune element, like in Hashimoto's or in Graves' disease, then looking at what triggered that in the first place. And was that a trauma or a stress, or was it an infection like Epstein-Barr or maybe COVID, or is it environmental toxicity? that's interfering with iodine uptake into the thyroid gland. And like nutritionally as well, you would know there's so many great tools that we have to lower the thyroid antibodies, which conventional medicine, you know, they don't have anything for that. So there's so much that we can do, and it makes such a difference.
Yeah, massively. I'm really glad that you mentioned iodine, because I feel like it's a mineral that we don't talk enough about. You don't hear it mentioned very often at all. And it is so, so important for your thyroid function and various other things in the body as well. What are some ways that people can get some more iodine into their diet? And are there any cautions that people need to take?
Yeah, iodine is not enormously through the food chain. Unfortunately, like our soil's quite depleted. It is found in kind of fish, seafood, eggs are a good source as well. In Australia, I'm not sure about in the UK, but in Australia, they used to clean the dairy vats with an iodine solution. So dairy did used to be a good source of iodine solution, but they don't do that anymore. And then all of your seaweeds, so kelp, nori, wakame, all of those sea vegetables. I guess as well, looking like the things that will block iodine uptake are the halogens and goitrogens as well. So they are compounds in different foods that will, yeah, literally block iodine uptake into the thyroid gland. So it will block thyroid hormone production. So fluoride, chlorine, and then your goitrogens are typically found in like your brassica family vegetables. So broccoli, cauliflower, kale, all the veggies that we love and that are so good for the liver and estrogen detoxification things, but you just have to make sure that you cook them, you know, so we're not eating buckets of raw kale or raw broccoli. Cooking those foods will deactivate the goitrogens. Soy as well can be a goitrogen as well, so tofu and things like that. So yeah, you can definitely get iodine through our diet. And then I guess the caution is that you can have too much iodine. We need iodine. It's so essential for our thyroids, for our brains, for fetal development, for the IQ of children. But you can have too much of it equally, and then you can tip yourself into overactive thyroid activity. We really only need like the size of our pinky fingernail throughout our whole lifetime. So it's a really small amount that we need. But if we don't have that, it can create really big problems. So I wouldn't be going out and supplementing with iodine. You know, I'd only ever take that if you were working with a clinician and it had been prescribed properly, because you can make a bit of a mess.
Yeah, I totally agree. I've seen that happen where someone has overdone the iodine and it's sent them hyperactive in terms of overactive thyroid. So yeah, it's a really good point to make that we don't want to be going out and just supplementing iodine willy-nilly, for sure. We mentioned iron earlier, and something that is not necessarily uncommon is this kind of like chronic iron deficiency or recurrent iron deficiency, even despite supplementing. So what's going on there? Why does that happen?
I guess when this happens, there's always two things that I look at. The first one is the gut and what's happening with absorption, or is there, you know, an ulcer or iron loss happening in the bowel, so any bleeding? Is there sufficient stomach acid, which you need to break down the iron? Is there bacterial overgrowth or maybe a parasite that is gobbling up the iron before the person can absorb it for themselves? So that's one thing that I always look at, is the gut. The second thing is if they're female, menstrual loss and heavy menstrual bleeding, which is so common. I really see that massively in clinic, whether it's endometriosis or fibroids or adenomyosis or just too much estrogen, really prolonged and heavy periods, creating a lot of iron loss, you know, blood loss and iron loss, and then subsequent anemia. And it's this cycle that you can't get out of until you fix the gut or you fix the periods, and then the iron regulates itself. But as well, like, iron has such an important role in the body, but you can as well have too much of it, like everything. So what I really try and steer people away from, just dump, like going a higher dose and more iron without looking at why it's not budging and why it's low in the first place, because you know, iron is actually very inflammatory. It creates a big oxidative stress response in the body. It can feed bad bacteria and parasites and infections if they are there. And it can, you know, really inflame the gut as well, which is why people can get constipated or nauseous with some of the cheaper iron supplements. It's because it is inflammatory.
Yeah, absolutely. So ultimately, if you are chronically deficient in iron, then there is a reason for it and you've got to figure out what that is. Years ago, I used to donate blood. They do that little finger prick test where they check to see if your hemoglobin level's good. And mine always came back fine. So I was donating, donating, donating. And then one day I actually collapsed. And when I happened to collapse around a load of doctors, which was very handy. anyway, there was like, go see a doctor, get your iron checked. My iron was on the floor. It was partly because at the time I was suffering with very heavy menstrual periods. And also because I was donating as regularly as I could, but it didn't get picked up. So I thought I'd share that because, you know, there's probably lots of people out there who maybe are suffering from some fatigue, but, you know, they think their iron levels are good because they're donating and being told that it's okay. But it's a very inaccurate test. So it's well worth having a proper test done to see not only are your iron levels okay, but are your ferritin levels okay? Is your hemoglobin okay? Kind of having like a full iron panel, because it leaves you feeling pretty rubbish if you don't have enough iron in your system.
Definitely. And you know, by the time your hemoglobin is low, that's anemia. So that's kind of end stage low iron. So yeah, definitely the importance of a complete iron panel is super important.
Absolutely. Are there any like big misconceptions or myths about any of the stuff we've been talking about, fatigue, thyroid health, iron deficiency, that you come across all the time that you really want to debunk?
I would say there are massive misconceptions with both. With the thyroid, I think probably the biggest misconception that I come across is, you know, people saying, I've had my thyroid tested and I've been told that it's fine. And when you have a look at the bloods, usually they've only tested TSH, which isn't testing the thyroid, it's testing the brain's communication down to the thyroid. And the reference ranges are enormous and they vary country to country. So depending on the lab in the country that the test was taken in, you could be have a thyroid problem in one place and no thyroid issue in the second country or lab. So I think kind of like a subclinical underactive thyroid is really common and often not picked up. And also that with iron, sort of, I'm tired, so I'm going to take an iron supplement is probably my biggest pet peeve. When I was younger and like in my teens and had issues with my iron as well, that was my thought process as well. I'm tired, so I'm iron deficient. And it's just not always the case, you know, just because you're tired doesn't mean that you need to take an iron supplement. And a lot of the time it will make it worse.
Absolutely. And, you know, the reality is that iron overload is dangerous and it can cause liver damage. And same for a lot of these other nutrients that we've been talking about as well. So it's so, so important to find out what your baseline is before you dive in with a supplement. And aside from anything else, you know, if you're supplementing something that you don't actually need, then firstly, you're wasting your money as well as potentially damaging your health, but you're also overlooking the other actual deeper issue. And more often than not, if you correct that deeper issue, you're not going to need to supplement in the long term. You know, you might need a short-term supplement to top you up, but you're probably not going to need one in the long term.
Exactly. And with iron as well and iron supplements, there are lots of different forms. And I think this is so important because people will go to the GP and if they do show to be iron deficient, they'll be given a prescription for usually a very poor form of iron in a really high dose. And the form's not very well absorbed, which is why they have to use such a high dose. But that comes with side effects. It comes with constipation, with black stools. It's not very nice and it doesn't usually get the iron up. Because iron can be toxic and can be inflammatory, the body has really strict like regulatory processes for the way that we metabolize iron. And it's called, there's an enzyme produced in the liver called hepcidin. if you take, say, a really high dose of iron, your body will then produce hepcidin, which will block iron absorption for the next 24 hours. So there is no point taking iron on iron on iron, and if it doesn't work, taking a higher dose or, you know, doubling the dose, because the body's going to block that. And it perpetuates the problem.
Yeah, I've seen lots of people who have had this chronic iron deficiency and the doctors keep upping the dose. And, you know, it's just so frustrating because it just doesn't work and it causes so many side effects. And actually, if they took a higher quality iron supplement, as well as addressing the root cause, then they would feel so much better and a lot quicker as well, because the stuff that you get from the doctors, only like a tiny, tiny fraction of it is actually absorbed, isn't it? It's such a unavailable form of iron, but it's just cheap. So that's what they give out, unfortunately.
Exactly.
You're clearly a fountain of knowledge. So where can people find out more about what you do and connect with you?
I'm on social media. Yeah, I guess the internet's the best way. So my website is just bridgetbeanotropathy.com, and probably of social media, I'm on Instagram the most. So it's just at bridgetbeanotropathy.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been so, so interesting. And I know that our listeners will really enjoy this episode because, you know, we've not spoken much about fatigue as a whole before. So all our fatigued goddesses out there are going to be glad to hear this one. But thanks again. And yeah, we'll speak soon.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for joining me for the episode. I really hope that you enjoyed it as much as I did. All of Bridget's information, her website, her socials are going to be in the show notes so that you can find out more about what she does if you want to. If you haven't already, please make sure that you hit follow or subscribe. And if you're enjoying this podcast, I would be so, so grateful if you could take just 30 seconds to leave me a little tiny review about how this podcast has impacted you. And make sure that you register for our upcoming web class, which is about activating the weight loss accelerators and removing the weight loss inhibitors. In this web class, we're going to be taking a deep dive into the real causes of stubborn weight. It's not calories, by the way. We're going to be getting deeper and addressing the actual root causes of your stubborn weight issues. So I'll drop the link for that in the show notes as well. Make sure you join me and I'll look forward to seeing you there. Have a wonderful rest of your day and I'll see you soon.